thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be able to present this paper here. Particularly, thank you very much for being here on a Friday late afternoon. I understand it's not a regular seminar day, but thanks for being here. So I'm going to talk about the link between corruption and tax evasion, and I primarily use experimental methods to study some of these social processes. And this is joint work with Amadou Molly, who was a research fellow here for about 3 or 4 years, and Robert Gillanders, who wants to be here as a research fellow. So there is a wider connection, and I'm here as a visiting scholar, so there's a very strong wider connection in this paper. So the motivation of this study really comes from this quote by the Prime Minister-elect of Pakistan in 2018, and he said after his election victory that all rulers who come so far, they spend money on themselves. The way our ruling elite spends money, how will anyone pay tax? People don't pay taxes because they see how our ruling elite spends that money on themselves. I promise that I will protect people's tax money. We will cut all our expenses. So it seems like what he's aiming at is something like people are not willing to pay taxes because they think the money will not be well used. And he's promising people that, look, I'm not going to, he's not saying up front that he's going to raise penalty or probability of detection and all of that. All he's saying is, look, we'll protect the money that you are going to pay us. So we are not going to spend money by extravagant spending and so on. So we will take care of your money. So that's what he's promising to the people of Pakistan, with the hope, of course, that the people will voluntarily start paying taxes. They'll see the value of paying taxes. Right? If you take this argument to an extreme, you'll see that not taking care of the tax revenue by splurging is, of course, one way of destroying the tax revenue. Other way of destroying the tax revenue is through leakages such as corruption. So corruption is a leakage, or embezzlement as a form of corruption, is a leakage through which tax revenue gets depleted, right? So if there is very high level of corruption, people may be unwilling to pay taxes. So that's the channel we are really interested in looking at. And to help you see the pattern between tax revenue and corruption better, here is a plot of a cross-country data on how justifiable it is to evade taxes on the y-axis and how justifiable it is to accept bribes. Of course, it is very, very hard to collect data on actual corruption. It's very hard to collect data on tax evasion, right? So here is one proxy. To the extent that justifiability leads to actual corruption, you can think of this as proxies of actual tax evasion and proxies of actual corruption, justifiability of accepting bribe. And clearly, there is a positive relation between how justifiable it is to evade tax and how justifiable it is to accept bribe. Right? The relationship is statistically significant. You may, of course, say that, you know, these are correlated attitudes. So this is how justifiable it is to do one bad thing versus how justifiable it is to do another bad thing. Agreed. So what we did was we dug up the data a little more. We went to the enterprise data and we tried to collect data on the percentage of firms who say bribe must be paid to get things done. So now we have World Value Survey justifiability of tax evasion. It's an attitude question. On the y-axis, and percentage of firms who say bribe must be paid to get things done. We again see a positive relation between the two variables. Again, these models, they don't have all the bells and whistles, nothing, plain and simple correlations. Okay? So again, we look at another variable we get from the enterprise data, which is percentage of firms who say corruption is a constraint so far as their economic activity is concerned. Positively correlated again with justifiability of tax evasion. However, the relationship is not statistically significant. So the picture that comes out from here is that it seems corruption and tax evasion, take whichever metric you may, are positively correlated. The big question, of course, is what is the causal relation? In which direction does the causal connection go? Right? To give you a brief snapshot of the literature and to contextualize our research question in the context of the literature, this is very classical stuff on tax evasion. Allingham Sanmo in Journal of Public Economics in 1972, they basically put a Beccarian structure on a tax evasion problem and found very intuitively that individuals' tax evasion decreases when you increase the probability of detection. Very intuitive, straightforward. The problem with this framework, by the way, if you have any questions, please feel free to stop me and ask. The problem with this framework is it seems like individuals pay taxes because of the economic consequences. If I evade taxes, I'll be hauled up. I'll have to pay a fine. With some probability, I'll have to pay a fine. There can be, my expected income can be negative if the probabilities and penalties are high enough. As a result, I evade. I do not evade. Right? Now, if you take this model seriously and apply some of the quantitative parameters associated with penalty, with probability of detection, etc., you'll realize that the current level of penalty and the probability of detection cannot justify the extent of tax compliance. So it seems that the economic consequence of not paying taxes is not enough to sort of induce us to pay taxes. There has to be something more. Enter behavioral economics. There has to be something like social preferences which induce people to pay more taxes. Perhaps it's the right thing to do. People think it's the right thing to pay taxes, so they pay taxes. Or people value the public good that is created from the tax revenue that is collected, and that value on the public good induces them to pay taxes. So these are not direct economic consequences of not paying taxes. So there's some kind of other regarding preference, social preference, which induces people to pay taxes. Now, if you believe that people in part, they pay taxes because they care about the public good that is created, the flip side of that essentially says that if people realize that the public good will not be created, will they still pay taxes? Probably not. And that is exactly what we are after. If people don't see the value of the public good, or if people believe that the public good will not be created, will they pay taxes? Probably not. That's the channel we are aiming to identify. Well, there is a theoretical literature to understand the link between tax evasion and corruption, but they are primarily interested in the nexus between a tax inspector, corruption among tax inspectors, and the tendency or the inclination of the citizen to pay taxes. So that's the theoretical literature which a bunch of people have studied, and what they've really tried to look at is to understand collusive bribery between a taxpayer and the potentially corrupt tax inspector. But if you think of the mechanism that we are after, it's not collusive bribery. It's that I'm paying taxes and part of the tax revenue is being siphoned off. So that's not collusive bribery. Okay? So, has this channel been explored in the literature? Well, there are very few studies which have looked at this channel. Some have looked at this channel through observational data, which have their own pitfalls, hard to establish causal connection, hard to really emphasize on the psychological mechanism behind corruption, tax evasion, and so on. These guys, for example, do use world enterprise data to understand the collusion between firms which are paying taxes and the tax inspector. This paper by Bjorn Jahnke, I don't know if I'm pronouncing the name correct, was actually a wider paper. So now published in EJP, they use Afrobarometer paper to show that corruption diminishes tax moral and trust in the tax department. But again, hard to pin down the causal connection. So can we use laboratory-based methods to study this question? Of course, I'm a behavioral economist. I use lab experiments all the time. My answer to that question will always be yes. But it's actually backed by some evidence. I have some work which shows that when people are taking quote-unquote immoral choices in a lab environment, they are actually facing some kind of a moral cost of indulging in unethical behavior in the structured environment of a lab. So there is a paper by Amadou Bolli and Armantier in EJ which show that some of these unethical behavior in the lab are externally valid, which means that there is a very high correlation between the quote-unquote unethical behavior in the lab and unethical behavior in the field across two different continents, actually. One in one set of data was collected in Africa, another set of data was collected in Canada. A very recent paper, we came across this paper a couple of months back, they show that laboratory experiments on tax compliance are externally valid. So we have a set of studies which show that corruption experiments or behavior in corruption experiments are externally valid, and now we have some evidence to show that behavior in tax evasion experiments in lab are externally valid. And not only that, the other major concern that people have, people who primarily work on observational data have, is that are the choices made by the student population same as the choices made by the non-student population? And this paper tries to address that as well by finding out the correlation or by finding out the extent to which these effects translate from a student population to a non-student population. Okay? But by and large, you know, two things are true, and several experiments have shown that quantitative treatment effects in lab experiments are not externally valid. Right? To the extent that you are interested in the quantitative treatment effects, to what extent does a 10% increase in probability of detection decrease tax evasion? These kind of questions cannot be answered through lab experiments. But the qualitative effects, the direction of the treatment effect, they are externally valid. So when I show you the results, you may want to keep that in mind, that the quantitative effects are not that important, but the qualitative effects are. So here are the questions that we are primarily interested in, and I'll give you a snapshot of the answer in case you need to leave earlier. Does corruption causally lead to corruption in the form of embezzlement, causally lead to tax evasion? The answer to that question in this setup is yes. We also try to understand whether tax evasion itself leads to more corruption, because the cross-country correlation that I showed you can potentially mean that it's corruption which can drive tax evasion as well. So our setup will be able to identify whether corruption increases in the presence of tax evasion or not. Okay? The third question we are interested in knowing is, does corruption or tax evasion lead to lower effort? Am I, as a worker, less likely to work because I think that my effort will be taxed, or income will be taxed? And the tax money, you know, will be embezzled by the public officials, you know, the tax inspectors. So why work? So that's the kind of discouragement effect that we can potentially see. So we will be able to detect whether we see some of those discouragement effects or not. And we don't find any evidence of that discouragement effect. Now here is another interesting to us thing that we try to do in this paper. So now think of this. If corruption affects tax evasion, if possibilities of corruption affects tax evasion, then if we impose a penalty on corruption, does that increase tax evasion? So we are interested in cross-domain effects of penalty. We are interested in spillover effects of penalty in one domain on another. We are interested in spillover effects of punishment in corruption on tax evasion. Similarly, we are interested in punishment on tax evasion in corruption. Okay, so these are the two spillover effects that we are interested in, and these are extremely important from the policy perspective, but we don't find any evidence that there are these cross-domain spillover effects, and there are important consequences for that. I mean, in terms of the mechanism that drives these results, this piece of information is quite important, and we'll discuss it at the end. Yeah?
And probably jumping a bit too far back. In the preliminary results, the middle one, does corruption tax evasion have an effect on how much effort people put in? Do people decide, can they decide to evade 100%, or can they only decide to evade on a portion of the income? Because that makes a big difference, I think.
That's a good question. So in our setup, they can evade 100%. But of course, if they end up evading 100%, it will be very easy for the public official to detect. When I describe the design, you will see that it is possible for a worker to evade without the public official knowing. Yeah. Yeah.
So, Ritik, almost tautologically, the question is almost obvious, isn't it? So I'm a tax inspector, and you're the taxpayer. I come and tell you, look, if you want to bribe me, you don't have to, you can evade tax, I'm not going to detect your tax, I don't want to check your tax records very clearly. So almost obviously this is true, right? So I don't still understand the research question.
So the context that you are talking about is actually these papers. So we are not studying that. We are not studying the collusion between a taxpayer and a tax inspector. That's not what we are studying. So the corruption is actually embezzlement of the tax revenue, which is not a collusion between a taxpayer and an inspector. Let me describe to you the setup that we have in mind. So the setup that you have in mind are guided by, these guys are studying that. They're studying the collusion between a taxpayer and a tax inspector, and they're bringing in lots of bells and whistles. For example, what kind of wage regime do I offer to the tax inspector so that, as a principal, so that the tax inspector does not engage in corruption, stuff like that. But we are not interested in the collusion between a taxpayer and an official. The taxpayer has to pay a tax. The taxpayer decides to reveal how much tax to pay, and the official ends up embezzling from the total tax revenue that is created, and that has implication on the public good that will be provided.
So you're not talking about corruption in tax administration.
We are not talking about corruption in tax administration. So that's this. So we are differentiating ourselves from this large literature by saying that we are not interested in the collusion. Because as you said, it's tautological, it's quite obvious. But these are important papers, by the way. but what we are taking a step, and we are going a step forward by saying that, look, the taxpayers can decide how much tax to pay, and the tax revenue then gets possibly embezzled by a public official, and lower public goods may be created. Okay. Right. So these are the main questions, and the results are up here for you to see. So we have a small model which offers some predictions, which we test. We come up with hypotheses from this model and we test them. But let me not get into the model now. We have an experiment with large number of treatments in this experiment. Let me try and convince you about this experimental design. So subjects come in a lab and they are divided into groups of three. So two subjects are randomly offered the role of a citizen and one person takes up the role of a public official. The citizens earn money by performing in a real effort task. So the reason they perform in a real effort task is that we don't want inherent abilities to confound the earnings. So so you don't need special ability to perform in a task like this. And what is the task? the task is very simple. The subjects have to count the number of zeros from a sequence of zeros and ones. So this is a sequence. The subject has to count the number of zeros from this sequence, and they have 90 seconds. For each sequence that a subject correctly counts, the citizen earns 100 mohurs. And public officials, on the other hand, they earn a salary of 2,000 for the task of creating the public goods. Okay, so that's the first stage in the baseline treatment. The first stage of the baseline treatment is one where there are two citizens matched with a public official. Citizens pay taxes and citizens earn money, and they earn money by performing in this very simple real effort task. Okay. Now in the second stage, a citizen has to pay a tax at the rate of 40% of the reported income. So remember, citizens are sitting in this room, public officials are sitting in another room, they're earning their money here, their income here, and then they're expected to report how much they have earned to the public officials. And that reported income can potentially be different from actual income. There is quite a high incentive not to report the full income. Okay? Now, tax evasion, by definition, then, is the amount underreported. The actual income minus the reported income. So the tax revenue that is collected per group, remember there are two citizens in a group, that goes to the public official, who is in charge of creating public goods. You know, there is a very, very large literature on public goods in behavioral and experimental economics. So what we do is we embed that public good game structure within this tax evasion structure. So the public officials, they get the tax revenue, they're supposed to create a public good, right? But before they do that, they can decide how much to embezzle from that pot of money. That pot of money is a public good, so a public official can decide how much to siphon off from that tax revenue. The remaining amount, of course, which is the net tax revenue, can then be used to create public goods. Again, a very standard public good game follows from that point. Right, so two decisions. One is the tax evasion decision on the citizen's part. The other is the embezzlement decision on the public official's part. So, I mean, many of you probably know, but I'll just re-emphasize this point that the public good is created by multiplying the net tax revenue by 1.6 and then dividing it equally between the two citizens. Now, suppose the embezzlement is zero. Suppose the public official does not embezzle anything. Then it's a simultaneous game between the two citizens, right? And it's a very simple public good game, and a two-person version of the public good game essentially is the prisoner's dilemma. So the question is whether the citizen should cooperate by paying taxes, in which case both are better off, or if they should not cooperate and refuse to pay taxes, in which case, they land up in the inefficient equilibrium. And it's very clear to see that this, why 1.6? It's actually calibrated so that we get the results of the prisoner's dilemma. The reason is, it is always optimal for a citizen not to pay taxes if the other person ends up paying tax. If both of them pay taxes, they end up getting 1.6. If one of them pays the full tax, the other does not, then the person who does not pay the tax ends up getting 1.8. So it is always optimal for me, as a citizen, not to pay the full tax. So this is assuming there is no embezzlement. Now bring in embezzlement. Embezzlement enters into the strategic structure. So no embezzlement, Nash equilibrium, contribution zero. Standard result of a prisoner's dilemma game. Now, if you bring in embezzlement, then you have a sequential game. You have You have citizens taking the decision how much taxes to pay, and then a public official taking the decision how much to embezzle. Right? So, of course, given taxes have been paid, what is optimal on the part of the public official? It is optimal on the part of the public official to embezzle the full tax revenue. Right? So if the citizens know it, then of course it is optimal on the part of the citizen not to pay any tax. So the SPNE of this game with embezzlement and tax evasion is zero contribution and zero embezzlement. But of course we don't see that in the data, right? So here is the baseline treatment. The baseline treatment is one where citizens take the performing the real effort task, they earn money, the citizens then report their earnings, the taxes are transferred to the public officials, the public officials decide whether to embezzle or not, and then public goods are created. Right? So that's the baseline treatment. Now we have to modify or tinker with this treatment to be able to detect some of the comparative statics we are interested in, right? So what do? Well, in treatment one, we disallow public officials from embezzling. So the structure of the game now is only a simultaneous move game at the citizens' level. Public officials are not allowed to embezzle money.
And citizens know this.
And the citizens know this. Right? So a comparison of how much the citizens report here in treatment one and how much a treatment report here in treatment three is likely to give us the amount of underreporting because of a change in this institution. Similarly, we design a treatment two where citizens are disallowed to make tax evasion decision. So they earn money, they earn their income, and they have to pay the full tax. The public officials know this. So a difference in embezzlement between this thing here in treatment two and treatment three is going to give us the pure effect of tax evasion on embezzlement decision. But is that entirely true? So think of this. There is another margin at which a citizen can operate. A citizen can operate at the effort margin as well. So maybe that this embezzlement decision is partly affecting this, and it is also affecting the effort on the part of the citizen by way of discouraging. Maybe the citizens are unwilling to put in that much effort because they think that part of the tax revenue will be embezzled. So we do not yet have the pure effect of embezzlement on tax evasion. We are trying to shut down channels one after the other, right? And thereby arrive at the partial effects. We now shut down both the tax evasion and the embezzlement channel, and then see if there is a difference in effort level between treatment zero and treatment one. That then can be attributed to whether citizens work more or less because of tax evasion. A comparison of the effort level between treatment zero and two will tell us whether citizens work more or less because of embezzlement. So now we can identify very precisely each of these different effects. And these are our primary, the cells in green, they are the primary outcomes of interest in our case. This is the public officials' embezzlement, and these are the citizens' reported incomes. So that was the first part of the experimental design. The second part of the experimental design has got to do with these spillovers from one domain to another, right? So here are the three remaining treatments. So this is treatment three, which is baseline, which is basically this treatment. So that's treatment three, the baseline, and then we have treatment. Four, in which there is a 20% chance of auditing and 150% penalty on the amount tax evaded only. Remember, there's no audit on embezzlement in treatment four. There is no audit on embezzlement tax evasion in treatment five. In treatment five, only embezzlement is audited. In treatment four, only tax evasion is audited. Right? Now, what are the outcomes we are interested in here? So suppose I audit tax evasion. Can I compare the amount underreported in treatment four with the amount underreported in treatment three? Yes, I can of course compare them, but they're sort of trivial, right? So if I impose a penalty on tax evasion in one case and don't impose a penalty on tax evasion in another case, of course I'm going to see some treatment effect. What we are interested in is to understand, if I impose penalty on tax evasion, am I likely to see less embezzlement or not? That's the spillover effect we are interested in. Similarly, if I impose a penalty on embezzlement, am I likely to see an effect on the tax evasion or not? So those are the cross-domain spillover effects we are interested in. And then in treatment six, both tax evasion and corruption are audited. Okay, so what are the outcomes we are primarily interested in? We are primarily interested in effort, which is the number of sequences solved. We are interested in the amount underreported by the citizen, which is actual earnings minus the reported earning. We are interested in the amount which is embezzled by the public official. And there are a bunch of other stuff that we measure, for example, what are the citizens' beliefs about how likely the other citizen is to evade tax? What is the citizen's belief about how likely that public official will end up embezzling, and so on and so forth? This belief elicitation was of course incentivized, and we collected information on a bunch of stuff, risk aversion and a post-experimental survey-based questionnaire as well. This experiment was coded up in ZTree and conducted in a large private university in India. The average payment was about 250 rupees, which is in PPP dollar terms about $18. Total number of subjects were 484. This is a huge sample for lab experiments, if you're wondering why this is so low. And we did obtain informed consent from the subjects. This is how the task page looks like. So these are the sequences.
If you go on this, the subjects, those 484, these are the people you already trained them to be like the taxpayers and others.
Citizens and public officials. So they come to the lab and randomly two-thirds of them are assigned the role of a citizen and one-third are assigned the role of a public official.
Yeah, I haven't had that before, but I want to ask, is it necessary that those you are using, they are part of the taxpayers, or just they are like any other normal person?
Sorry, they are student subjects from a university. They are all student subjects. Yeah. Large university in India, we recruited students from there. So this is what the task page looks like. These are the sequences. They come one after the other. So if I type 2 here, okay, then I'll be told that the answer is incorrect. And I have at most 3 chances for each sequence, and then the software moves to the next sequence. As you can see, that there are these multiple strategic structures in the game, the public good game embedded within a tax evasion game. So we were wondering if the subjects could understand these strategic payoffs. So we provided them with an application where they could enter different numbers and figure out what is optimal for them. And there's an example of the screenshot of that application. So these are the subjects and the results. So the first result, no surprise. Yeah.
Sorry. One question about how this is run. You have all these different treatments. How often would people play the game?
Right. So we run an entirely between subject treatment design, which means that those who participated once never participate again. So no two people participate in more than one treatments. And the other question is about whether what kind of treatments they receive. Well, treatments are assigned randomly at the session level. So we don't have a treatment at the individual level, which means a session is organized and then we randomly pick a treatment and administer it on the session.
So session means
this is a session.
People have done their effort and then they've decided to pay or not, or is a session like?
So all these people are in one session. So one session is like a group of 30 people coming in.
Yeah.
They are then randomly assigned the role, and then we impose a treatment on that session. We decide which treatment to run for that session. There could be other way of running it. For example, you could say that an individual is subject. So you're randomizing at the individual level. We are not randomizing at the individual level, because we have to give oral instructions about what to do. And if we randomize at the individual level, then we have to give multiple sets of instructions to different people, which we can't do.
I'm just a bit wondering or worrying in the sense that in true life, usually we play repeated games, and this is clearly then not a repeated game.
No.
Right?
No. Yeah.
So each session is one treatment, or within that session there are multiple treatments, right?
Each session is one treatment.
Okay.
Yeah. They just come here, they are given a treatment, they have no clue about what other treatments are there, they just make their choices in their treatment, they go home with them.
But are they assigned different roles? Like, are they all citizens or are they all public officials?
So in a session, two are randomly assigned the role of a citizen, one person randomly assigned the role of a public official. Why two? Because in order for us to implement a public good game, we need more than one person, remember? Because we have to pay taxes, and then there has to be a public good which is created. You cannot have a public good for one person.
How do you make sure that they don't talk to the people of the next session?
we can't make sure that. We can't make sure that. No. So that's it's a large. So the total number of. That's a very good question. We may want to put a footnote in our paper. 15,000 students. So probability of people meeting, of course, is on the lower side, but entirely possible.
And rather than put the cameras, see whether people talk to each other.
So do you make a call for people to come, or you meet whoever you meet on the campus, then they, if you can participate, how do you choose them?
We circulate an information in the university through their teachers and faculty and other students.
Okay.
And then we try to organize sessions of 30 people, 36 people each.
Okay.
But not all sessions have 36 people.
Okay.
But it has to be multiples of three for us to be able to implement
this
design.
But at least you can show that they don't all study the same subject.
Yeah, they don't.
And for your footnote, I think that's helpful.
Yeah,
because if they all study either,
sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And they don't, I don't have the table which shows the balance here, but they don't. Yeah, so the effect of tax evasion or embezzlement on effort provision, there is no differential effect between T0 and T1, so which means that citizens, they are not optimizing at the effort level. Okay, so I don't have much time, I'll quickly go over the results. Effect of embezzlement on tax evasion, so this is our main result. So T3 is where there is tax evasion as well as embezzlement. Okay, and here we are measuring average amount which is underreported. And you can see that average amount that is underreported in T1, where there is no possibility of embezzlement by design, is lower than the average amount which is embezzled in T3. If you exclude the zeros, so these are the averages only for those people who end up embezzling, or end up evading taxes, you see that the average conditional on evading taxes, the average amount evaded is 843 in T1, average amount evaded is 1042 in T3, which means people are are evading significantly more in an environment where part of the money will be embezzled by the public official. If you look at the extensive margin, we again see that 61% people underreported in T1 and 74% people underreported in T3. These differences are all statistically significant. We run a bunch of tests and don't go into the gory details here. So this is we run some regressions with period fixed effects. So remember, there are multiple periods that people play in, that the citizens play in. So they take decisions in 10 periods where they are randomly rematched and rematched with a public official. So we account for the period fixed effects in this model, in model 2, and include a bunch of demographic control variables in model 3. But the difference between T3 and T1 continues to be economically significant and statistically significant. Effect of tax evasion on embezzlement. So here we are interested in comparing embezzlement in T2, where there is no tax evasion, and embezzlement in T3, where there is tax evasion. So it turns out, again, that in the presence of tax evasion, more and more public officials are engaging in embezzlement. The average amount embezzled is higher, and the frequency of embezzling is also higher. So the differences are statistically significant at the 10% level in this case. We again run some regressions by including the period fixed effects and the demographic controls, and you will see that the difference between T2 and T3 continues to be significant in terms of the percentage of tax revenue that is embezzled, as well as the probability of embezzling. So which means that in an environment where tax evasion is possible, public officials engage in more corruption. And in the previous case, we showed that in an environment where embezzlement is possible, citizens are engaging in more tax evasion. What about audit probabilities? So we want to look at the audit probabilities, the cross-domain effects of penalty. So in this T3, there is no penalty. In T4, there is a penalty on tax evasion, right? So there is a penalty on tax evasion, and here we are measuring the amount underreported, the amount evaded. Big difference between tax evasion in T3 and tax evasion in T4. Surprising? Obviously not. Because in T4, it is tax evasion which is audited. So if I audit tax evasion, people are going to pay up. What we are interested here is to see whether there is a difference in tax evasion between T3 and T5. It is in T5 that not tax evasion, but embezzlement is being audited. So we want to see whether tax evasion goes down significantly from T3 to T5, where embezzlement is audited. And we see that amount underreported in T5 is 770, amount underreported in T3 is 662, the difference between the two is not statistically significant. So we were hoping to detect these cross-domain effects of penalty, but that doesn't show up in the data. Similarly, there is no significant difference in, of course, there is a significant difference in embezzlement between T3 and T5, but in T5, it is embezzlement which is being audited. But we don't see any significant difference in embezzlement between T3 and T4, where in T4 it is the tax evasion which is being audited. So once again, no cross-domain effect of penalty. In conclusion, we established a causal link through an experimental setup between tax evasion and corruption. We showed that when in the presence of possibility of corruption, people are willing to pay less taxes, and it seems like the public officials are willing to embezzle more if the citizens can potentially evade taxes, right? But if you think through it, why is it that a citizen is willing to evade taxes? Does the citizen care about the public good which is being created post-tax revenue formation? Probably not. It is not purely strategic in nature. Why do I say that? Now, think of the audit treatment. In the audit of the embezzlement treatment, it is true that lower amount will be embezzled. As a result, more public good will be created. So why is it that people are unwilling to pay more taxes? Why is it that people are unwilling to comply in an audit treatment where an embezzlement where an embezzlement may take place, where the embezzlement is being audited? It seems, so if I care only about the public good and I realize that embezzlement is being audited, then I should pay more taxes. But we don't see that. We don't see those cross effects, which means that it seems like there is a moral spillover effect of unethical behavior from one domain to the other. And this moral spillover effect cannot entirely be explained by strategic considerations, by monetary considerations. I care not only about the public good that is being created, but I also care whether people are engaging in corruption or not. That environment where corruption is possible, embezzlement is possible, is inducing me to jack up my tax evasion decision. So there are the suggestive evidences. Of course, I mean, we have chalked out a treatment through which we can precisely identify whether these strategic considerations are there or not and to what extent they are there. I won't get into the detail of the proposed treatment, so we'll have possibly another treatment we'll run and we'll compare the data with. Happy to talk to about you later on this if you're interested. So it seems that the cost of corruption is often underestimated. There are these spillover costs of corruption, not only in terms of the public good that is created, but the general equilibrium effect of some kind on tax evasion. So people are less willing to pay taxes if there is high levels of level of corruption in the society, and these general equilibrium effects should be taken into consideration when policies are formulated. I just wanted to tell you a little bit about behavioral development, something which I'm very interested in, and there's a lot of recent focus on behavioral development, thanks mainly to this paper in Handbook of Behavioral Economics by Kramer, Rao, and Schilbock, who show that in a range of problems on development, it is possible to look at some of them through the lenses of psychology, through the lenses of behavioral economics. And here is a plot of the inequality data which I downloaded from wider database, and it shows that, you know, there are these three countries. The yellow one is Qatar, the red one is Venezuela and United States, the blue one. The inequality in Qatar has dramatically gone up, the inequality in Venezuela has come down, and the inequality in the US is more or less constant over a 10-15 year period, such that all these three countries are at approximately the same level of inequality. Now, if we take the standard paradigm, it would seem that the standard paradigm would tell us that the levels of inequality matters. But behavioral economics would tell us that it is these changes which matter more. So do we believe that a society where inequality has dramatically gone up will react in the same way as a society where inequality has been largely stable and in a society where inequality has gone down. So standard paradigm would tell us that levels matter, but behavioral economics would tell us that it is these changes which matter more than levels. So changes matter more than levels. And some of the you know, social tensions that we see in economies or societies where inequality is dramatically increasing comes from these changes, or having to re-optimize our decisions with respect to these changes. So some of the standard problems that we see in development, in poverty, for example, psychology, tools from psychology, insights from psychology has been used by Senthil Mullainathan and others, and the toolkit of behavioral economics provides a rich set of tools to look at some of the standard problems in development. And I'm sure some of you will be interested in taking this up. Thank you very much.
We still have 5 minutes for questions.
Yeah.
One clarificatory question. So, in this study, is this being assumed that there is, say, 100% efficiency in provision of public goods? So,
100% efficiency?
Yeah, even in terms of, say, providing public goods. Because like as a taxpayer, for me, it might also be a consideration that how efficient is the, say, government or the state in providing public.
That is not something we are modeling here.
Yeah, yes.
That is not something we are modeling here. So the inefficiency of converting the gross tax revenue to the public good only comes from the embezzlement decision of the public official. But post the embezzlement decision, there are no more inefficiencies by way of state capacity or think of what you mean.
But that could also, I understand that it's not being considered in this model, but that could also be a reason why, and among many other reasons, but that could
yeah,
also be
that's a not a question we are interested in this paper. Yeah, so we think of it as an applied theory model, right? So you decide to model a few things, you decide to leave out a few others, right? So we have decided to model only the embezzlement part as an inefficiency in this structure. Yeah.
I think that question is actually important to your motivation, right? When you show that people, you know, more likely to pay tax if they think that there's embezzlement, but the fact is citizens cannot tell whether it's actually corruption or just inefficiency.
Here they can.
It's a perfect information.
Exactly,
yeah. But tie back to like the big question, you know, like the correlation at the beginning, you could see just that, you know, citizens just not can't tell. Sometimes we think that
between tax evasion and corruption.
Between corruption
so that,
and inefficiency of the government in providing.
No, so the graphs which I showed you were correlations between tax evasion and corruption. So you're talking about some kind of a spillover again? Spillover from small crimes?
Your interpretation of the results is suggesting
yeah.
that there's sort of a spillover
in terms of... Sure, that's interesting, yeah.
But my question is a bit along these lines, and I guess it's not clear to me that it's necessarily beliefs about public goods provision that are guiding the results, right? It could be that the channel between corruption and tax evasion has to do with ideas about the ability of the state to enforce the rules and ability of the taxpayer to sort of circumvent it by, you know, okay, I'm caught, but I can pay for it and get out of it. And it's not clear to me that
Right.
I wonder how you...
Let me quickly describe the treatment, which we have not run, but I think now from the comments that I'm getting that we have to run this treatment. I was 50% convinced that we have to run this treatment. Now I'm 90% convinced that we have to convince this treatment. So in this treatment, we impose an administrative... So think of this. What is the only source of inefficiency in the tax in the conversion of tax revenue to the public good? It's the embezzlement. Right? Now suppose... I introduce a treatment where embezzlement, where public officials are not allowed to embezzle, but there is an administrative cost which is imposed on the tax revenue before it can be converted into a public good. Right? Now, how do we make sure that the distribution of this administrative cost in T7 is the same as the distribution of embezzlement in T3? We have to ensure that, right? Because if the distributions are different, then we can't compare the behavior of the citizens. What we plan to do is, we take the embezzlement amounts from the T3, right? And we take that empirical distribution of the embezzlement amounts and impose it as an administrative cost on T7 citizens. So it's not the public officials who are siphoning off the money. It's an administrative cost which has been imposed on the tax revenue, and public officials don't have anything to do with it. It's a more neutral inefficiency, if you will. So what do you think? I mean, this is a question, I haven't run it, but what do you think? In the presence of a neutral inefficiency, such as an administrative cost, which is monetarily identical to the inefficiency caused by the embezzlement, will there be change in tax evasion? So now all else is equal. The magnitude or the monetary value of the inefficiency is identical. Only thing that changes is one is a corruption decision by a public official. The other is an administrative cost which is not decided by the public official, and the public official does not get to benefit out of it. So my prior is that tax evasion may be lower, but it will not be... it will be significantly different from the environment where a public official is embezzling it, despite the fact that monetary value of these two inefficiencies are identical. Which again gets to the immorality of tax, of embezzlement. I care, as a citizen, I not only care about the public good that I may get, it's not only strategic considerations which is guiding my decision of how much tax to evade, but it is the immoral act of embezzlement which is leading me to evade more taxes. Because here in T7, when I impose this administrative cost, there is no immorality. Public officials are not behaving in an immoral way. The strategic consideration remains identical, right? But people, my prior is that citizens will be complying much more if they face this administrative cost, which is otherwise identical to the distribution of embezzlement. But it seems like this is an important treatment that we should run in order to get at the questions that you are interested in. Last, I wanted to thank Prioma Mustafi, who did a stellar job in terms of helping us code this in C3, and also KC Adaina, whose help we couldn't have conducted the experiment in the university. Thank you very much.